Hello again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 289. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. One of the best things about being a veteran garden writer are the friendships I've forged over the years with my peers. And today's guests are definitely in that category of meaningful professional friends who have become so much more than that. Stephanie Bittner and Alethea Harampolis are partners in Homestead Design Collective, a Bay Area-based landscape design firm. Stephanie is the co-author of The Beautiful Edible Garden with Leslie Bennett, and Alethea is co-founder of Studio Chew with Jill Rizzo, her co-author of The Flower Recipe Book and The Wreath Recipe Book. A few years ago, Stephanie and Alethea teamed up to form Homestead Design Collective. These two creatives have focused their business on landscapes that are useful and, most importantly, those that can be harvested year-round. The title of their new book, Harvest, says it all, and I'm so honored that they asked me to write the foreword. In those few hundred words that appear in the opening pages of Harvest, I wrote this. I once believed that clipping branches and blooms to bring indoors was akin to denuding my garden. But about 10 years ago, I began to interview America's flower farmers and their customers, floral designers devoted to and creatively fueled by domestic and local botanicals. Mesmerized by their uncommon floral crops, I began to regard the incredible beauty of my own backyard for all its potential. That meant enjoying not just the small quantity of food, berries, herbs, and vegetables that my kitchen garden produced, but appreciating its abundance by displaying garden greenery and flowers in my vases. This new old philosophy of living with my garden's generous harvest is best learned from true practitioners, such as Stephanie Bittner and Alethea Harampolis of Homestead Design Collective. These women are also proponents of good design, and they adhere to the guiding philosophy of choosing plants at once both ornamental and useful. Although not farms by any means, our urban and suburban backyards should be used in their entirety, say Stephanie and Alethea. The culinary world has its own nose-to-tail way of eating. Harvest, the book you hold in your hands, introduces the gardener's version of that idea. Call it a fruit-to-root way of growing, with an appreciation for all parts of the plant, from the first tender shoots in spring to the pods and hips of late fall. I've learned so much from these two pioneers. Stephanie is a role model for landscape designers, inspiring her harvest-minded clients to turn their once unproductive yards into prolific and lovely sources of edible bounty. Alethea is a role model among the farmer florist crowd, blending edibles with ornamentals, aromatics with the wild foraged, houseplants with weeds, all to create dramatic, moody, seasonal florals for everyday decor and for magnificent occasions. In Harvest, they celebrate the slow food movement on a highly personal scale, integrated with a slow flowers ethos. When edibles meet botanicals, we live intentionally with plants throughout the seasons. And when you embrace this practice, you will be richly rewarded by your garden. That's just an excerpt from my foreword, and you'll have to get the book to read the rest. Stephanie and Alethea maintain that every garden, not just vegetable plots, can produce a bountiful harvest. In their beautifully photographed guide to growing, harvesting, and utilizing 47 unexpected plants, readers will discover the surprising usefulness of petals and leaves, roots, seed, and fruit. And I just want to mention the photography was done by David Fenton, and it's beautiful. He did a gorgeous job. You'll learn how to turn turmeric root into a natural dye and calamintha into lip balm. Make anise hyssop into a refreshing iced tea and turn apricots into a facial mask. Crabapple branches can be used to create stunning floral arrangements, oregano flowers to infuse vinegar, and edible chrysanthemum to liven up a salad. This practical, inspirational, and seasonal guide will help make any garden more productive and enjoyable with a variety of projects. Organic pantry staples, fragrances, floral arrangements, beverages, cocktails, beauty products, and more. Using unexpected and often common garden plants, some of which may already be growing in your backyard. With remarkable multi-purpose plants in harvest, there is always something for gardeners to harvest from one growing season to the next. Please enjoy this conversation with my two friends as we discuss their design philosophy and their collaboration on the book Harvest. Stephanie and Alethea were recently featured speakers at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show in Seattle, and I was able to corner them in a hotel lobby to record this interview. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I am delighted to introduce two good friends, Stephanie Bittner and Alethea Harampolis, and they are the co-authors of a brand new beautiful book that you must get. It's called Harvest, Unexpected Projects Using 47 Extraordinary Garden Plants. And Stephanie and Alethea are here in Seattle for their presentations at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show, which I just heard Stephanie's single person show, and now you guys are presenting tomorrow. So hi, Alethea.
Hello.
It's nice to see you, and you've been a past guest of this podcast. Some of you may know Alethea as the one half of Studio Chew, and you and Jill Rizzo have produced a number of books, and we had an episode about the flower recipe book a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And don't you guys have a new book out?
You know, we don't. It's they took the wreath recipe book and they rebranded it, but it's actually still the same book.
Okay. It's so, something about flowering branches?
Yeah, they changed the name and put a new cover on it, but okay. It's actually still the same book.
But oh,
Jill and I are now East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah.
So
Studio Chew has evolved, and lucky you got to partner with a good friend, Stephanie Bittner. And Stephanie, tell us about your business, and you and I have known each other through a couple of your businesses. So what do you have now?
So Alethea and I co-own a business called Homestead Design Collective, and we are a landscaping company that focuses on creating beautiful gardens that provide harvest.
So, and you're in the Bay Area, right?
We're in the San Francisco Bay Area.
And beautiful gardens that provide harvest has been sort of your personal design approach ever since I've met you, when you had a previous business and you had a previous book. And I mean, this has been going on for over a decade, right?
It has. Wow, a decade?
And you're very young. You started very young. What was the tipping point? What was the thing that kind of changed edible gardening from, and I like what you say, we're not farmers, we're gardeners.
Right.
What caused all that to happen?
So I grew up in the Bay Area, and my mom always kept a kitchen garden. And we had a beautiful garden that was very functional, but always very beautiful. And so when I came back around to study landscape design, I knew I wanted a garden that was productive, but yet still had a certain aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And the thing about things about our gardens is that they can be any aesthetic. We design modern gardens, you know, Mediterranean-based gardens, but they come back to the point that they are functionally beautiful. And really for us, that means, of course, you know, we want to include things to eat, but also plants that support organic garden care, because since we're eating from our gardens, we need to bring beneficial insects and pollinators. And lucky us, the plants that the bees love are the plants that we actually love to cut and bring into our homes, and that means flowers.
Right. And so now you have a partner in crime who is known as a florist, but Alethea, you have a background in landscape design, right?
No.
Or gardening?
Just, I grew up in my mother's garden in Marin, and my grandfather in Australia grew flowers for the Melbourne Flower Market in the, you know, 30s and 40s.
So you have a legitimate genetic passing
so,
through there.
So, yeah, he grew the flowers that people would take to market and, you know, make arrangements with. So gardening is kind of I feel like it's my first background, and then I became a florist, and with Stephanie, now I want to go back into the garden.
Yeah.
And that's what our relationship is about. Is
right.
Heading right back.
But you're bringing an interesting point of view to your clients in saying the garden can feed all the senses.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely.
That includes your dinner plate, but the vases as well.
Definitely.
Wow. What kind of gardens, first of all, we can't even talk about what kind of gardens you're designing without talking about the pièce de résistance, the garden you designed for Sunset Magazine at Cornerstone. How did that come about?
You know, Joanna, she asked us if we'd like to make a garden. I think it came about really quickly, like maybe a couple weeks, and we said, yes, we'd love to do that, and then we started designing it, and she was really easygoing, and she pretty much just let us do what we wanted to do. Yeah.
Right. So in a way, was that happening while you were working on the book harvest?
Yeah, we were. It was actually kind of crazy. We were finishing our manuscript. It was the holidays.
We're talking about a year ago, right?
It was
a little bit more than a year ago.
A little bit more than a year ago. God. And
you're still standing.
And we're still standing. And then we got the call from Joanna, and what an opportunity for us.
Yeah.
And really so much, I think, also just the fact that these beautiful, productive gardens are also a lot what Sunset talks about,
mm-hmm.
lifestyle-based gardens. And so we came to her with some design ideas, and she was really supportive
she said yes.
And we're talking about Joanna Silver, who's now the garden editor at Sunset. And what... how is that garden? Well, maybe we'll show a few photos. Because do you feature them in the book?
We don't.
Okay. Well, maybe not then, but we'll
send you some photos.
Yeah. There's something, I just watched your lecture, so you had a few images, and there's something that is, I think, really gratifying to the homeowner who's putting in an edible garden to think, this isn't frivolous, this isn't lavish and showing that I have disposable income. This is a garden that I can harvest from. And for whatever reason, I think you feel better about that when you're doing it.
I do. Gardens take resources, to be really frank. And it's not just resources of finances. I mean, it does take money to build a garden, but it's also resources of the environment, water, how much water do you have to put into it? But I also think more importantly, it's a resource of your time. And so you kind of talked about that. It's gardening versus farming.
Mm-hmm.
So with the Sunset Gardens, we really wanted it to be aspirational, but also attainable and approachable. You're probably not going to have 23 fruit trees planted in succession in your backyard, but you can take that concept and include 5 fruit trees and plant them in succession so that you have one fruit tree that is in harvest, then the next one goes off, then the next one. So you have a continuous harvest throughout the year.
I thought that was one of the smartest tips you shared tonight in your lecture about early, mid, and late harvest if you want all of one variety, like apricots, you gave this example. You're thinking about all 4 seasons when you're designing.
We do. Well, again, we're coming from a place of, again, gardening and living in our gardens. And we don't just live in our gardens in the glorious months of July. We live in our gardens year-round.
Yeah.
So we always want something to be in bloom. We always want to have something to clip and snip and use in the kitchen, put in a vase, and just live in it.
Right. So I have a little anecdote I'm going to share, and I know that Alethea will crack up when she hears this, but recently I was having a conversation with the publisher of a major floral industry trade magazine, and he said, what's going on? Every florist I interview or that I meet wants to be a flower farmer or wants to grow flowers. Is there some weird kind of thing happening? And I just felt very vindicated. But I'm just curious what you're seeing. And I mean, you're a highly, celebrated florist who's now, Alethea, you're talking to clients about maybe you're not saying this. Don't hire a florist, grow it yourself.
Yeah.
In a nice way.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I, with Stephanie and I, that's what I want people to do is to cut from, the various bushes and branches and things. And you don't need a lot of stuff when you're making an arrangement. You don't need much. You can make something really beautiful. And I think that that's kind of my new idea about floral arranging.
Which is, you had mentioned about the amount of waste in the industry, yeah, and like this so is sort of an waste. Antidote to that.
And, well, you know, the flower farmer thing, flowers are really expensive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the wholesale markets, like, it's not that cheap. And so I think a lot of florists want to grow their own flowers. So you can just cut what you need for what you're making. And I think that that is kind of the root of what Stephanie and I want to do is just take what you need. Don't take a lot, you
right.
know, just use what you have.
Yeah, that's a really good point because a lot of, in the wholesale markets, a lot of things are bunched by, you know, 10 or 10, 12
yeah,
stems
right.
or roses are 25
right.
stems.
Yeah, and you have to buy so much.
But
and you don't need it all.
Yeah, maybe you only need one or two of everything.
And you need one really beautiful rose. You don't need 12 of them in an arrangement.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite thing to do in Stephanie's garden is to go out there and pick the most beautiful, I'll go and seek out like the most beautiful rose or the perfect branch or, you know.
Well, Stephanie closed her talk today at the Northwest Farm Garden Show with one of your arrangements. I think it was really, first of all, it's gorgeous, but it was really an illustration of what harvest is about, that you had some dried elements and you had some edible elements and you had some pollinator ingredients and some fruiting branches. And I don't know how you design, Alethea. Do you just let the plants talk to you? Or?
I do. And I go and seek out, you know, on the plant, I'll go and look for like the perfect rose or... I think in that arrangement, there's actually something that's totally dead. There's a piece of hydrangea in there
yes.
that's totally dead.
Brown
and
hydrangeas.
I think that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I want people to know, like, the whole lifespan of a flower, you know, the bud form, and then when it's in full bloom, and then when it's dead, I think it's really beautiful. And I think people should celebrate the whole life of all of that.
Yeah, I love it. So you guys started the business about 2 years ago, right? Homestead Design Collective.
We did 2 years ago.
But you've been friends for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So
we
talk
have.
About your collaboration. And you previously, when I first realized that you knew each other was The Beautiful Edible Garden, which is a book you worked on with Leslie Bennett. And that came out when? A couple, like 2012 or 13?
I think 2013.
Okay. And Studio Chew and Alethea and Jill had some kind of... role in that there were several arrangements. Were they mostly floral?
Yeah, they were.
We collaborated.
We collaborated, and the idea again behind Beautiful Edible was it was a design book, but yet we wanted to show harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked Jill and Alethea, and like amazingly, they said yes. And we got to know each other over the process and spent a lot of time in the garden.
Talking about
really kind of having our feet in the garden. And I do think you're talking about the flower farmers, and it's very much in the edible landscaping world, the farmers who grow vegetables, it's pure production.
Right.
So what Al brings to Homestead is kind of taking the best ideas of the flower farmers and translating it to the garden.
And then you think you're kind of doing the same thing with the food.
And then we do that with the food. And I think that that's been the perfect marriage. So kind of when we got together 2 years ago, it was like, we want to do this new thing. And we were just both like, yeah.
And so how do you approach, I mean, I know this is, we're talking about the book, but just in terms of your own design process, when a client comes to you, hopefully they're pre-qualified. Like they know your deal and they know they're going to get edibles. Or otherwise, you'll send them off, right? I mean, how do you handle that?
So we actually design non-edible spaces as well.
Okay.
It's a little known fact.
Wow. Okay. Well, those people are lucky too.
They are. But they're still harvestable because you can harvest non-edible things and bring them in for your vase.
That's true.
So
that's just kind of a degrees of harvest.
Right.
Right.
Especially when we're doing a full property. If we're doing a front yard and a backyard, there are many instances where it does not make sense to have edibles in the front yard. So we include things that provide a floral harvest instead. And then in the backyard, totally ratchet up, you know, do a ton of edibles.
Get everything that you can eat and use for indoor decor and that sort of thing. Anything you want to add, Alethea, about that in terms of when you sit down with the client, are you always over there like saying, where's the cutting garden?
No, she actually isn't. She's like, it's much more emotive. Can I just jump in?
Yeah, sorry. No, yes.
So it's much more emotive. I mean, typically when we're meeting with clients, Al will just very much just be like, so when you put things in your vase, like, what do you think of? And it is that single flower. It's not the bunch of 25 roses. And it's also very much like fragrance. I think we don't talk about that enough about in our gardens. We have highly fragrant gardens.
Which is touching on that memory sense as well.
Oh, definitely.
Because people are probably telling you stories about their grandmother's garden.
Fragrance goes, it will transport you right back to a day with your grandmother or anything
or
in your life or anything. Yeah. And I want, as a florist, people always think that I have all these amazing arrangements in my house all the time, and I actually don't have any arrangements in my house at all. But what I do have is one beautiful stem of something that I love, and it could be honeysuckle.
Right.
Honeysuckle is like my favorite thing in the world.
Because you're admiring its form, and it, and then you're smelling it,
yep,
and then the color is beautiful, and
just one little piece of honeysuckle that I stole from some
I love that you
thing.
Pare it down to the essence.
Oh, yeah.
That's really cool. So clients, you don't have to be a floral designer to have a garden that you've designed. You can just...
And Stephanie will not let me put any honeysuckle in anybody's garden because it will take over the whole garden.
So that's the rub.
Oopsie.
So this is us figuring it out. And actually, that's actually been like the most exciting thing. I think about the last 2 years is that Al has brought so much to my design sense, because she so much loves honeysuckle, and there are plants that I love, and she's just like, really? And
I'm like, what would one be that?
Well, the anise hyssop, the flowering basils.
And they're beautiful, and I've learned to love those things too, you know, and being with you in your garden, like anise hyssop, when it's really hot outside, she makes this anise hyssop iced tea that's amazing.
But you probably never cut it for a vase.
Never.
But now maybe you would.
Definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely.
So the difference between the previous book, The Beautiful Edible Garden, which was very design, kind of like here's how to design a landscape,
right,
and then Harvest, you were saying that Harvest is a little bit more of a, almost like a guidebook for how to use and live in your garden, right?
Right. I think Harvest is definitely inspiration for living in your garden. And we really want to open people's eyes up to a new palette in which they can include in their garden.
So how did you guys approach this? Because there's 47 garden plants, but you probably had 470 to start with.
There were more than 47, I think.
There was a lot.
Yeah.
There was a lot. And I had to say to Steph, let's give me your favorites.
Yeah.
And like, be honest about your favorites, okay? Like, we kept pairing
tough
it down.
Love, right?
Yeah, very tough love.
Why? Because you kind of had to negotiate between the two of you of the ones that you know would make it into the book.
And she loves so many things that I just wanted, I wanted to know, like, all right, so what do you really actually love?
This is the single stem arrangement in book four. Because I'm like a full garden of so many things that I love. And which is great because you always leave more for the next time.
Right.
And, but it also, Al's touch on this book made, you know, is just very much like each plant has so many purposes, and
right,
it's very purposeful.
Okay, so the cover is a club, a hand-gathered clump of just-picked rhubarb.
Yes.
Let's talk about rhubarb. Why does it make it on the cover, and why do you often put it in clients' gardens?
We do. The one thing about this book that we don't probably haven't talked about enough is that we shot it for almost 2 years, and every single photo was taken in the moment of the plant's harvest. And then we literally shot the plant in the garden, cut it, and did the project in that moment and shot it.
So you're
our favorite photographer in the
world. Yes, can we mention Dave Fenton?
Yes. Tell us about
Dave Fenton. So we worked with Dave Fenton on The Beautiful Edible Garden. I met him through Sunset. He had just, when we first all met, We had this like get together, and he literally had just shot, I think, Studio Chew, and he came over to shoot Star Apple, and we were just like, you are the guy.
Oh, because you all knew it.
Yes.
Wait, did he
yes.
shoot The Beautiful Edible Garden too?
He did with Jill.
Okay.
Jill also shot.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you kind of had a compadre in this whole process.
Yeah. We did. And in his.
It's a lot of commitment of time.
And we just trust him completely. Completely.
So would you say, okay, we're going to harvest rhubarb today. Mm-hmm. Come on over. And we have some ideas, but you kind of felt collaborative about it.
I don't know that we had, I don't think we actually had any ideas until we were doing it.
Oh, and it just kind of popped into your...
It just happens organically.
Through your hands.
I can say that, yes.
I love that.
And he just sees us.
And the cover was him.
So it's the sexiest rhubarb.
It really
with that
world.
Dirt on it.
I know.
All right, we'll show the cover on the show notes.
We harvested the rhubarb and we took some harvest shots. And then Dave was like, you know, let's take the single shot. And it was dirty. Like, and if you saw the other photos, like actually almost every photo in the book, my nails are dirty, but my nails were like covered in dirt. And he literally was like shaking my hand, getting some of the dirt off. And he just like, it fell on the rhubarb and that is on the cover.
So you weren't like there with tweezers placing
the clump of dirt.
It literally, this shot actually wasn't taken as a cover shot. This was actually one of the very first shots we took for just for rhubarb.
Yeah.
And
so
it
what's
just
the
really
project?
Spoke.
What? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah.
It just spoke to you.
It just spoke to us. Pickles.
Okay. So what did you do?
So the projects in the book are very much about learning skills about living with this type of landscape. So there's one lesson on quick pickles. There's one lesson on how to preserve your herbs with salt. There's one lesson on how to preserve edible flowers in vinegar. There's one lesson on flower creams. And then you can actually take all of the plants in here and probably use most of them in any of the projects.
Oh, interesting. On the technique.
On the technique.
Wow. Okay.
So rhubarb was the lucky one to be easy pickles. And so they were quick pickles. And we really love rhubarb pickles because they're great with Bloody Marys. Can I say that?
Yes, you can say that. I love that. So you actually cut the stems and pickle them and then... You can just eat them as a snack.
Yeah, so the pickling method for our recipe is actually a quick, fresh pickle, so you can eat them right away.
Wow, and then use them in Bloody Marys as like the stir stick?
As a stir stick.
Okay, and then are you ever using rhubarb in floral arranging? The foliage, or does it not hold up well?
No, it doesn't hold up well.
Okay.
But I do like to go and pick it out of the garden and just smell it. The stalks smell so amazing.
Oh my gosh, and the bitter taste.
Just all of it. Yeah. It's like the most amazing smell.
I have, when you said transport, I have, my grandfather, my father's father, for some reason grew rhubarb.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we would eat it raw because we didn't know better.
Yeah.
And my mouth is watering right now because you talked about that.
Yeah.
Wow. And the smell too.
Yeah.
Okay, so we talked about the cover project, and I want to put you both on the spot and ask you to describe maybe one of the projects that you were most excited about or that you kind of lobbied for to get into the book. Can I put you on the spot, Alethea, about
that? Sure, of course, yes.
Okay.
Flower cream.
Yeah, I love that. So it's not just edibles. It's
It can be anything.
Aromatic.
That honeysuckle that I keep talking about. And there's a lot of things. You could use rhubarb for that flower cream.
Okay.
You're basically just taking like a fat, and it could be animal or vegetable, and you're laying something that's fragrant on top of that. The flowering basils, calendula, there's so many things in there.
What's the fat that you use or that you like?
Coconut oil.
Okay.
It's my favorite.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. And you can build a flower cream from a coconut oil base with edible or scented ingredients.
Yeah, it's enfleurage, which is like a very old French technique for getting a scent into something. Basically, you just take a fat and you melt it down, and then you pour it into a like a casserole dish, and you let it solidify again, and then you put the material on top,
mm-hmm.
and then you let it sit for a few days, and then you take it away, and then you put more. I do like 3 to 5 processes.
Wow.
And then,
and ultimately, do you keep it in a little jar or give it as gifts or all of the above?
All of that.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
And you can eat it. You can put it on you. I use it like
seriously.
Yeah. I take my makeup off with it at night. When my face is dry, I put it back on. I use it on my daughter all the time.
So it's kid safe.
It's totally kid safe. Wow. And then you can cook with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
What in the project in the book, what flower did you
use? Lilac.
Wow.
Because you have how many? lilac
quite bushes. A few. And also people don't, all of the plants that are in the book are edible. Like we start off at the base of like, you can eat these plants and they should be in your landscape. And then what else? And
people aren't really aware that lilacs are edible. Is that what you're saying?
They're not. Oh. And they should be eating their lilacs as far as I'm concerned.
They should or should
they
not?
They should.
Oh, okay.
And because you're growing them in your backyard, you're also growing them organically, we're assuming. You can't just go, you know, you can't go to a big box store and buy lilacs and make a flower cream that you would eat because they're probably have not been, you know, they've not been grown organically.
Right. You know, Stephanie, this is a complete aside, but I, of course, we've known each other for a long time. And I remember when the Beautiful Edible Garden book came out, I interviewed you, I think for the LA Times, and you said to me, by getting people excited about growing edibles, I'm subversively turning them into organic gardeners. And that was really profound. I love that. And that the reason you just described, right? You can't eat it if you're using any kind of chemical-based application in the garden, right?
Exactly. So once you switch over your garden to organic garden care, which is not hard, even Home Depot now carries organic pest control, organic fertilizers. This is not something that only folks in...
It's not fringe anymore.
Yeah, it's not fringe. This is something that everyone can do. Once you do that, your roses become edible. And all of a sudden, you can eat your roses. You can make... Al does an amazing rose facial toner in the book. And again, you're putting the essence of roses on your face. You wouldn't do that if there were pesticides on those roses.
Right. And your pets and your kids are all safe in the garden. I love that. Okay, so I put Al on the spot, Alethea, who it's called Al.
I'm Al. She's Al.
What about you, Stephanie? What do you want to make sure that people think about it when they buy this book and be sure to try? Because there's so many great projects. Or what did you get excited about?
It's hard. It's
because you have so many?
Yeah, because...
You do, too.
Because... Well, I mean, we were talking about this the other day. Some of the projects are things that Alethea and I both have been doing all of our lives. And there are other projects in here that we developed just for the book.
The book gave you the platform to do it.
Exactly. Yeah. But one of the projects that I've been doing, like, all of my life, when my children were young, I used to always make edible flour butter with them. And then we would make the butter with the edible flowers, we would freeze half of it, and then we would take the others and we would make the most beautiful pastas and raviolis with these like blooming butters. And so that recipe is in the book, and it makes me think of my girls.
Oh, neat.
So.
Oh, my mouth is watering listening to that too. And then from
do I get another one?
Yeah, you do. Like something good. That maybe that people would be surprised to learn about or hear about.
Well, definitely the projects are about preserving and they're about utilizing. And then some of it is just living. And so some of that includes some booze.
And we like booze.
We do like booze.
Yeah.
And so there's some fun cocktails in the book. And one of the ones that, again, kind of like things I grew up with, the Vanda Orange recipe is something that my mom always made. So when I was growing up, there was always a big old jug of Vanda Orange in our fridge.
And how do you spell that? V-A-N-D-A?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, no, I know. We talked about this.
I'm good. It's Van, which is V-I-N, and then...
D apostrophe
Orange.
Vanda Orange.
Vanda Orange.
D'Orange.
So, and we kept it pretty French in our project, so we suggest Sancerre, but you can definitely make it with Sauvignon Blanc. We use sour oranges, the Kanoda orange, but you can also use it with kumquats or even navel oranges. And there's vodka in there. There's a little anise. There's some vanilla bean, some cinnamon, pretty much all the good stuff in life.
Wow.
You let it sit.
It's so attractive.
It's beautiful.
Just the vivid orange, and you're using all parts of that orange.
Yeah, you want to use the seeds as well as the rind. And I can't say that enough, with all of these plants, we want you to use the foliage, the flowers, the roots, the seeds. Some of these projects are about seed harvest. Some of them are about root harvest. Some of them are about leaves. Some are about flowers. We want
stems, bark,
the whole thing. Use it all.
Wow. Well, that is a beautiful winter project. So
it
maybe
is.
we'll show a photo of the Vanda Orange. And I have to say, you're the person who taught me about Shinoda oranges as a landscape plant.
And I'm kind of obsessed.
Yeah, because you got me thinking that why use an ornamental plant when you can not add a have a edible plant in its place? So that was one of them, I think.
It was. So we talk a lot about ornamental edible swaps. Mm-hmm. And so the Kanoto orange has the myrtle. It's known as the myrtle leaf orange. And so basically the leaves on this plant look like boxwood. So if you're going to put boxwood in your garden, don't. Instead, swap it out for the Kanoto orange. You'll have the exact same look, and you'll have oranges in order to make some really good booze.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, well, you're speaking tomorrow at the Northwest Farm and Garden Show, but this is going to run in a couple weeks, so people will have to find you other ways. You need to buy the book Harvest. We're going to try to get a copy to give away, so I will tell you about that at the end of the episode. You can find Alethea and Stephanie at all their social places, and it's mainly Homestead Design Collective, right? And then I know you have Instagram feeds, so I'll add that. How can people find you if you're teaching or lecturing? Are you going to be able to do some of that?
We actually have quite a few things going on right now. And I think we need to update our press page on our website because you just made me think about that.
But people can probably sign up to be on your mailing list and yes. find out about what's cooking in the fall.
Definitely.
Or in the spring, summer, and fall.
Yep.
I guess you have a lot of clients to keep happy while you're also promoting this book. I hate it when people say, what's your next book? I think, let's just enjoy this one for a while, right?
I'm already thinking about that.
Just figuring it out.
Ooh, okay. I can hardly wait. I love it. Anything I didn't ask you that you want to add at the end here? Are you good? Because I could talk to you forever, but we have to go to dinner.
I do think that we need to mention that, Deborah, that you wrote the introduction to our book.
Right. Yes. Oh, forgot about that.
Yeah, you did. And we love you so much and also are just so inspired by your willingness to mentor so many of us out there in both the gardening and the floral world. And just how what a force you are in bringing gardeners and florists together.
Oh, thanks.
So, Do you know that I call you the flower mom?
Oh, thanks. I hope I'm not that old. Flower mom. I like that. I have to say, when you asked me to write the foreword to the book, my first reaction was, well, not really. I'm not a food gardener. Mm-hmm. And both of you said, but that's okay because you're about bringing nature in and harvest and appreciating what's, as Alethea just said earlier, the five, what did you call it, the four-step bouquet? Four steps out of the back door. So, I'm excited to reread what I wrote because it was a long time ago.
It was really beautiful, yes.
But I think I was so honored and wanted to lend my endorsement for your philosophy. It's so encouraging to see more and more people embrace this philosophy of, hey, time is short, money is tight. I don't need to put all my resources into a big, brilliant green carpet of front lawn. Maybe I should have something that will feed me and my family in all ways. People are getting excited about that, and you're showing them how.
Well, slow food, slow flowers. It's a natural progression.
Yeah,
and I really think.
Then, slow booze.
Yes, yeah, slow life. Yeah, let's talk about slow life another time.
Yeah.
But then translating these big ideas into your daily life and translating it into a garden. Because everyone wants slow food and slow flowers, but then how do you do it?
Yeah, and maybe they just start with one thing on their patio and then, it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
No.
Good. Well, I'm excited to have your voices. Encouraging people in the floral community and the flower farming community to be more thoughtful about integrating all of these sensory passions into what they're doing. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Please
check out our show notes at deborahprinzing.com for episode 289, where you will see photos and find instructions and recipes for a few of the projects featured in Harvest. You can also enter to win the book. Thanks to the generosity of 10 Speed Press, publisher of Harvest, we have two copies to give away in a drawing. To enter, you must post a comment about your most useful garden plant in the comment section corresponding to this episode at deborahprinzing.com. We'll draw the winners on March 29th and announce them the following week. The Slow Flowers podcast has been downloaded more than 170,000 times by listeners like you. Thank you to each one of you for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. If you value the content you receive each week, I invite you to show your thanks and support the Slow Flowers podcast with a donation. The button can be found on our homepage in the right column. Your contributions will help make it possible to transcribe future episodes of the podcast. Thank you to our lead sponsor for 2017, Certified American Grown Flowers. The Certified American Grown program and label provide a guarantee for designers and consumers on the source of their flowers. Take pride in your flowers and buy with confidence. Ask for Certified American Grown Flowers. To learn more, visit americangrownflowers.org. We're also grateful for support from Arctic Alaska Peonies, a cooperative of 50 family farms in the heart of Alaska, providing high-quality American-grown peony flowers during the months of July and August. Visit them today at arcticalaskapeonies.com. And welcome to our newest sponsor, the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, a farmer-owned cooperative committed to providing the very best the Pacific Northwest has to offer in cut flowers, foliages, and plants. The Growers Market's mission is to foster a vibrant marketplace that sustains local flower farms and provides top-quality products and services to the local floral industry. Find them at SeattleWholesaleGrowersMarket.com. Longfield Gardens has returned as a sponsor this year, and we couldn't be happier to share their resources with you. Longfield Gardens provides home gardeners with high-quality flower bulbs and perennials. Their online store offers plants for every region and every season, from tulips and daffodils to dahlias, caladiums, and amaryllis. Visit them at lfgardens.com. And finally, thank you, Association of Specialty Cut Flower Growers. Formed in 1988, ASCFG was created to educate, unite, and support commercial cut flower growers. Its mission is to help growers produce high-quality floral material and to foster and promote the local availability of that product. Learn more at ascfg.org. I'm Deborah Prinzing, host and producer of the Slow Flowers podcast. Next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Brenlin. Learn more about his work at kinetictreefitness.com.